From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. At least one person has been shot and is in critical condition at the Capitol in Washington, D.C., as Donald Trump's supporters breached the walls, smashed windows, and entered the Senate. D.C. police were overwhelmed, even as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called on the Defense Department to send in the National Guard. Virginia's governor has reportedly called in the Guard after the Defense Department did not. The scenes at the nation's capital have shocked Americans. On a day that was supposed to focus on the ceremonial counting of Electoral College votes in the presidential race, just hours before Trump's supporters stormed the Capitol, the president was out among them, declaring he would never give up the fight to remain at the White House. We turn now to Saru Jayaraman. She's the president of One Fair Wage, an assistant adjunct professor of public policy and director of the Food Labor Research Center at the University of California, Berkeley. Welcome to the program, Saru.
Thanks for having me.
What is your reflection on this day as these thousands and thousands of people who were present in Washington, D.C. breached the Capitol? I want to not be surprised and shocked considering what we've witnessed for the past 4 years, but at the same time, it isn't shocking, is it?
It's shocking, and no matter how much we shouldn't be surprised, and what I want to talk about is the fact that, you know, people of color in this country have known this was not a true democracy for a very long time. But despite all of that, we must be outraged. We must be horrified every time something like this happens, because otherwise we accept it. We become numb to the insanity. Mm. We become numb to the idea that we aren't fighting for this to be the true potential democracy that it could be. So I think we have to be outraged at the travesty, at the lack of acceptance by a sitting president of a democratic process of an election. And to me, it goes back to the complete disrespect of people in America, especially working people, especially people of color, complete disrespect of their rights and ability to exercise voting and democracy.
This action at the U.S. Capitol, do you view this not just as a slap in the face of American government and members of Congress and President-elect Joe Biden, but the votes and the democratic will of American people, largely people of color?
That's right. That's exactly right. I mean, the fact that this happened the morning after Georgians, largely people of color, largely women of color, delivered the Senate to Democrats. The fact that that happened the morning after, it is almost like a direct reaction to people of color, especially, and working people exercising their right to vote. It's almost like a reaction to say, not only do we disrespect and disregard your right to vote, but we are going to engage in violence. We are going to violently overthrow your rights, your ability, your exercise of your democratic rights. It is an outrage. And I, again and again and again, keep thinking about, imagine if it were reversed. Imagine if white people largely delivered the election in Georgia and people of color stormed the Capitol the next day. Can you imagine? We wouldn't have one person shot and carried out on a stretcher. We'd have a genocide. We would have masses of people shot by police.
Four years ago, when Hillary Clinton lost the Electoral College but won the popular vote, had any of this transpired in the role reversal that you just mentioned, and of course it wouldn't have happened because that's not how communities of color tend to react, we would have, of course, had such denunciations. And we need look no further than what transpired last summer, not just in Washington, D.C., where Black Lives Matter protesters were met with riot gear outfitted law enforcement, but in cities across the country where we were told that violent thugs were destroying our cities.
That's right. I mean, when you have armed people showing up at state capitals and at the federal capital and they are white and one person gets shot, you know, it's horrific. And you just imagine people of color armed at any state capital or at the federal cap. I can guarantee you people would have been killed today. So it is a direct reaction to people of color exercising their right to vote. It is a direct repudiation of people of color exercising their right to vote. And it is such a clear, clear example of the two Americas in which we live.
The idea of what is unfolding being dubbed a coup is only now making it into the mainstream discourse. But do you, you know, but folks like myself and other independent journalists have for weeks been calling what Trump has tried to do a coup, because it's by definition, if you try to overturn an election, a democratic election, it's a coup. And I'm wondering what your reflections are on the fact that far too many normalized what Trump was trying to do.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say weeks. It's been months and months of hundreds of organizations and organizers across the country gathering and preparing for what we expected to be a complete coup, because the one thing I think the media did not do, or mainstream media did not do, that we started to do, was to take President Trump at his word when he said he would not accept the results of the election. Why are we surprised today when he said that so many times during 2020 and even in 2019? Why are we surprised? And so when he said that, we took him at face value. We started to organize and prepare. Many groups across the country, you know, held protests on election day and the day after to make sure the votes were counted. We've been preparing for this. We are not surprised, but you know, we can't let this stop us. I'm so incredibly, incredibly in awe and proud of the women of color of Georgia who made this happen despite, frankly, similar threats to them that have occurred in Georgia for weeks now, for weeks. You know, churches getting bomb threats and death threats. I mean, it is horrible what is happening in DC, but again, communities of color have been facing this when they try to vote, when they try to mobilize their peers to vote, for a very long time. So we've been preparing for this. We've been calling it a coup for months. Let us call it what it is. It's an attempted coup, but we just can't let it be an actual one.
Let's talk about the broader issues, Saru. We have a president-elect Joe Biden now with a vice president-elect Kamala Harris, who, because she will be a tiebreaker in a 50-50 Senate and a House of Representatives, that means Democrats will control the Senate, and then a House controlled by Democrats as well. Here we have a rarity, at least over the past decade, of all three chambers of the government being controlled by Democrats. Democrats have been in this position before and have screwed it up before. And if one were to assume that they would do the right thing this time, one would, of course, be naive at best. What do you and your allies want a President Joe Biden on January 20th, assuming he does take office January 20th, to do?
We want him to deliver to the people who got him in office and delivered the Senate. And that is working people, people of color, and women of color. But I think we have to take some responsibility for this, a lot of responsibility. A decade ago, when Obama started his first term with a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate, very little got done. You're right. We screwed it up. We screwed it up because we, as a left, as organizers, as people in the streets, sigh of relief. You know, Democrats are in control. We can back off. We're not going to organize. Some people felt very excited about having access to power for the first time. You know, meetings in the White House, meetings with Congress members, meetings with leadership in both houses, and forgot to push. And what happens when you forget to push? The Democrats fall back to the center. The Democrats forget who delivered them the election. The Democrats forget their promises, and they fall back to mediocrity and milquetoast and things that honestly result in them losing. So doing nothing over the next 2 years will not only result in nothing happening to deliver for the people who got them elected, it will result in them losing, because they are an uninspiring milquetoast party when they don't deliver. And so what we need to do as a people is to not sit back at this moment, not sit on our laurels, not breathe a sigh of relief. The fight begins now to push this Democratic House, Democratic Senate, and president to deliver for the people that got them the majority. And that means delivering on reproductive justice, on health, universal health. It means delivering on wages, a $15 minimum wage, and a full elimination of that absurd and ridiculous $2.13 wage for tipped workers. It means delivering on the things that they promised during the campaign, because those things are what inspired people of color and working people and women of color in particular to vote and deliver them what they got now.
So let's talk about the $15 an hour minimum wage. I know that's an issue close to your heart. This is such a travesty. Even some Republicans will say, yes, the $7.25 minimum wage at the federal level is far too low. If Democrats control all of these chambers now, it's a simple matter, isn't it, of the House reviving the bill, making $15 an hour the federal minimum wage, and the Senate passing it and Biden signing it into law. It shouldn't take very long as the Democrats are united. And, you know, people have been bringing up the fact that it's very possible that in their constant bid to outdo the Republicans on being nice to them, Democrats may want to share power. So we haven't had a 50-50 split in the Senate very often in the history of the United States. I understand this is only the third time it's happened. And in the past, when there has been such a split, there's been a much more power sharing between the two parties. There has been equal numbers of senators on committees to share power. But of course, that was before Republicans decided to throw all rules of sort of normalcy and ethics and integrity out the window, right? I imagine there are some Democrats right now thinking we should share power because it's 50-50 split. It isn't fair for us to control the Senate.
Yes, you said it best. It should be an easy thing. It should be a no-brainer for the Democratic House, Democratic Senate, and president to deliver $15 an hour, but the Democrats are not united, particularly in the Senate. There is a desire to, yes, work with Republicans. And not just that, there's a desire to basically court business, to provide for business, to provide for owners and not for workers. There already has been such a rush to provide taxpayer dollars, subsidies, free subsidies for corporations, for owners, with almost no relief for workers, almost no relief for workers. And we have to push Democrats in the Senate to deliver for workers first. We can deliver for employers, absolutely. But come on, who is going to work in these businesses? Who is going to consume in these businesses? It is going to be an impossibility to save these businesses unless the workers can be saved first. And so we cannot be talking about any more relief for employers without simultaneous or prior to that relief for workers. And that means a $15 minimum wage for everybody, including eliminating the sub-minimum wage for tipped workers.
Are you worried about Biden bringing on an economic advisor like Larry Summers, who thought that, you know, $2,000 in stimulus payments was just a terrible idea?
I'm worried about not only that. I'm worried not only about $2,000 is a terrible idea, but this overwhelming desire among several Democrats and even people in the administration to provide free cash relief for employers and not be willing to do the same thing for workers, and not be willing to have any restrictions or protections for workers in providing that cash relief for employers. We have to stand strong as a country and say, how could we possibly say we can't provide cash relief to workers and in the same breath be providing way more cash relief for employers? If we're gonna do any kind of relief for any industry, workers have to get relief at the same time or prior to that. It has to be a condition. Either two bills or included in the same bill, workers must have protections. I don't know what people think is the future of this country, our economy, our ability to consume, if the masses of people are not able to buy food for themselves, are lining up at food banks, who is going to consume in these small businesses that you're saving with our taxpayer dollars?
And in fact, last year when the Senate passed the CARES Act, inadequate as that was, the relief that it provided for unemployed Americans that was effectively $15 an hour if they were to work full time, actually buoyed the economy in a way that was quite palpable. People were able to not just pay for their necessities, but even start saving a little bit of money when they ordinarily couldn't have done so. But somehow that was just too much socialism for our government.
The idea that somehow that somehow workers would choose to stay home and receive that over going back to work, which, by the way, is not an option for most workers. You know, the way unemployment insurance is set up is that you lose those benefits if you don't take any job that comes your way. But the idea that workers would give up going back to work because $600 was so cushy means that you weren't paying your workers enough to begin with.
Exactly. And if corporations wanted to compete with that, they could pay their workers more.
That's right. Pay your workers enough to survive and they would be more than happy to work. In fact, that's what everybody I've ever talked to in the restaurant industry wants to do, is to go back to work, but to go back to work safely and to go back to work with a living wage so that they are not reliant on customers to feed them in this horrific moment. You know, we released a report a month ago based on 2,000 surveys of workers who had gone back to work in restaurants in the fall. And workers reported that tips are down 50 to 75%. And 40% of workers said sexual harassment had gone way up during the pandemic. Hundreds of women reported that male customers were asking them to take off their masks so they could judge their looks and therefore their tips on that basis.
Wow.
And so these wage issues have gone from being a matter of racial and gender and economic injustice to becoming literally a matter of life or death. And so, you know, I just talked to folks in the Senate today who said very likely a democratically controlled Senate is going to look at COVID relief before it looks at minimum wage. How you cannot see minimum wage as a COVID relief measure is it's outrageous to me, because as I just explained, not paying people a livable wage is the source of their exposure to COVID. They're being asked to take off their mask to earn their income.
Wow. And of course, just simply being exposed. We know now there's a much more highly transmissible strain of the virus than before, which could mean that even those social distancing requirements might not be adequate to prevent the spread of the disease. Circling back to the issue of what has happened at the Capitol on Wednesday, for the long term, if the Democratic Party does the right thing with its bold progressive agenda and lives up to its stated ideals, isn't that the best protection against future Trumpism and future Trump-like leaders?
I'll share a brief story with you. The day that the electors were meeting in Albany, New York, the capital of New York, so the electors showed up to approve, to vote on who New York State was going to go to, Biden or Trump. On that day, we held a rally at the Capitol with tipped workers talking about this issue we call masculine harassment, talking about we don't earn enough to survive. And at the same moment, across the lawn, there was a massive Trump rally with folks fighting against the electors voting on Biden as New York State's pick. And within minutes of us being there, the Trump folks at the Trump rally came over, asked us what we were fighting for, and said, "Thumbs up, we're with you. We need livable wages for all. Everybody has to get paid. Everybody has to get $2,000 checks. Everybody has to get paid $15. And they ended up joining our rally in Albany, New York.
Wow.
That to me is an indication of what would happen if Democrats delivered. Once Democrats deliver, the people who are struggling, who are part of that Trump world, who benefit from $15 an hour and universal health care, you are going to see a shift, but only if you deliver.
Meanwhile, Meanwhile, the effects of fake news and propaganda seek to keep them convinced that it's the left who's their enemy and Democrats who are their enemy, right?
That's right. That's right. They joined our rally for $15 an hour and one fair wage. Wow.
Where can people find out more about the work you do, Saru, and support it?
Thank you so much for asking. It's onefairwage.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website as well. Saru, good luck to you. Good luck to all of us. Thanks so much
for joining us.
Thank
you so much.
My guest has been Saru Jayaraman, president of One Fair Wage and assistant adjunct professor of public policy and director of the Food Labor Research Center at the University of California, Berkeley. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.